Welcome back to the deep dive.
Oh, yeah.
This time, we're tackling something
we are
fundamental to the digital world. Data structures and algorithms. We've got a stack of research and articles.
Yeah.
And we're going to extract the why and the how behind these building blocks of efficient computing.
That's right. Yeah.
You ready to jump in?
Absolutely. Let's unravel the elegance behind these
often
misunderstood concepts.
First up, we have binary search trees, or BSTs. I've always pictured them like a digital family tree with data instead of relatives.
That's a great way to visualize it. Each branch or node holds data, and the tree is organized so that finding information is lightning fast. Imagine searching for a word in a dictionary.
Uh-huh.
You don't flip through randomly.
Right.
You use the alphabetical order to narrow down your search. BSTs use a similar concept, arranging data so that anything smaller goes to the left and larger to the right of each node.
So it's all about minimizing those steps, making searching, inserting, and deleting data super efficient.
Right.
But what happens when the tree gets unbalanced?
Right.
Like a family tree with one side way bigger than the other.
That's where things can get tricky.
Okay.
A balanced BST is ideal for peak performance. When a tree becomes unbalanced, those search times can increase dramatically.
Yeah.
In extreme cases, it could even devolve into a linear search, examining every single element.
Oh, wow.
It's like having a company directory with thousands of employees.
Right.
But it's just one giant list instead of being organized alphabetically.
Talk about an HR nightmare.
Yeah.
So how do we make sure our digital family trees stay nice and symmetrical for optimal efficiency?
There are techniques like rotations and balancing algorithms to help maintain a certain level of balance as data is inserted or deleted.
Okay.
It's all about keeping those search paths as short as possible.
Now that we've seen how BSTs keep our data organized, let's explore how graphs help us understand connections and relationships. This is where things get really interesting because we're talking about modeling the connections we see everywhere, from social networks to roadmaps.
Exactly. Imagine social media, for instance. Each person is a node, and friendships are the edges connecting them. That's a graph in action. But graphs come in different flavors. Directed graphs have connections with a direction, like a one-way street, while undirected graphs are like friendships. The connection goes both ways.
And what about weighted graphs? Are we talking about data on a diet?
Not quite. Oh. A weighted graph adds a value to those connections. Imagine a map where the edges represent roads. The weight could be the distance between two cities.
Okay.
Unweighted graphs, on the other hand, simply show whether a connection exists, like in a basic social network diagram.
Okay, so we've got these nodes and connections.
Right.
But what can we actually do with them?
There are tons of operations you can perform on graphs. One is traversal. Think about how you might find a friend of a friend on social media.
Mm-hmm.
You're hopping from one node to another, following those connections.
Right.
That's graph traversal.
Ah, so that's how those people you may know suggestions work.
Precisely.
It's like a digital matchmaking service based on connections and shared interests.
And then there's pathfinding, crucial for things like GPS navigation,
mm-hmm.
where the graph represents roads and intersections.
Okay.
The algorithm finds the shortest or fastest path between two points.
So instead of driving around aimlessly, those algorithms are finding the most efficient route based on all those interconnected roads and intersections.
Uh-huh.
It makes you appreciate those little blue lines guiding us through traffic.
Huh.
But before we get too lost in the digital map, I'm curious about the origins of graph theory.
It all started with the puzzle, believe it or not.
Ooh.
The Seven Bridges of Königsberg was a famous problem back in the 1700s. The city of Königsberg had seven bridges, and the challenge was to find a route that crossed each bridge exactly once.
Sounds like a brain teaser worthy of a deep dive of its own.
It is. And the mathematician Leonhard Euler tackled this problem, and his solution essentially laid the groundwork for graph theory. He abstracted the problem by representing landmasses as nodes and bridges as edges, demonstrating that no such route existed.
So a centuries-old puzzle about bridges led to a field of mathematics that powers everything from social networks to GPS navigation.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. But speaking of organization,
yeah.
let's move on to a concept we use in our everyday lives without even thinking about it. Sorting.
Right. But when computers handle vast amounts of data, efficient sorting becomes critical. That's where sorting algorithms come into play. They're the invisible force behind everything from searching the web to understanding financial markets.
So are we talking about alphabetizing our digital sock drawer?
Not
What
exactly,
the?
but the principle is similar. Sorting algorithms arrange data in a specific order, making everything from searching to analysis much faster. It's like the difference between trying to find a specific book in a chaotic library versus a well-organized one.
So tell me, what are some of the stars of the sorting algorithm show?
We've got quite the lineup.
I'm ready for a parade of efficient sorters.
There are simple ones like selection sort, where you repeatedly find the smallest element and put it in its correct position.
Sounds straightforward, but I bet it's not the most efficient way to handle a mountain of data.
You're right.
Okay.
It's like meticulously going through your entire wardrobe to find the perfect outfit. It works, but it's not exactly speedy. Then there's insertion sort, which is great for nearly sorted data.
Okay.
It's like organizing your bookshelf by adding books one by one in their correct place.
Ah, that satisfying feeling of a perfectly ordered bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
But what if we need to sort a massive database? We need something a bit more heavy duty, right?
Absolutely. For larger data sets, we have algorithms like merge sort and quick sort, both of which use a divide and conquer strategy. They break down the data into smaller chunks, sort those, and then merge them back together.
So a bit like tackling a giant jigsaw puzzle by first assembling smaller sections. I love that analogy. It makes these complex algorithms seem a bit less daunting.
Exactly. And then there's heap sort, which uses a special data structure called a binary heap to sort things. It's a bit more complex, but very consistent in its performance.
Okay.
And of course, no sorting algorithm discussion is complete without the infamous bubble sort.
Ah, yes, the one everyone loves to pick on.
Yeah.
It's like those bubble tea drinks where the tapioca pearls slowly rise to the top. Fun to watch, but not the fastest way to get things done.
It's true. Bubble sort is simple, but quite inefficient for large data sets. It repeatedly compares adjacent elements, swapping them if they're out of order.
Right.
It gets the job done, but with a lot more steps than its more sophisticated counterparts.
But here's the thing. I bet most people don't realize how often these sorting algorithms are working behind the scenes in their daily lives.
You're absolutely right.
Right.
From searching for products on Amazon to scrolling through your social media feed, sorting algorithms are working tirelessly behind the scenes. Even something as seemingly simple as displaying search results in order of relevance relies on them.
It's like they're the unsung heroes of the digital age, constantly bringing order to the potential chaos of massive data sets.
Exactly. Speaking of tackling challenges,
Okay.
let's shift gears to a powerful problem-solving approach. Dynamic programming, or DP.
Ooh, sounds intense. Does this involve training our data to do parkour?
Not quite. But I love your enthusiasm. Dynamic programming is all about breaking down complex problems into smaller, more manageable pieces, and then combining those solutions to solve the bigger problem.
So divide and conquer.
Yeah.
I like it. But what makes it dynamic?
The dynamic comes from how DP remembers the solutions to those smaller subproblems. It's like having a cheat sheet for your math homework, avoiding redundant
Oh,
calculations.
I could use that back in school.
Yeah.
Instead of resolving the same equation,
Right.
you just pull the answer from your cheat sheet.
Exactly.
That's brilliant. But I need a real-world example to really grasp this.
Imagine you're designing a system for a warehouse where robots move items.
Okay.
There are countless paths those robots could take. You want to find the most efficient path, right?
Absolutely. You want those robots zipping around, not getting lost in the aisles.
Exactly. Dynamic programming can find that optimal path by breaking the problem into smaller steps, figuring out the best way to get from one point to another within a section of the warehouse, and then combining those solutions to find the best overall path. It's like giving those robots a super efficient GPS that's always learning and optimizing.
So instead of brute forcing their way through the warehouse,
Right.
those robots have a dynamic strategy that saves time and energy. Speaking of efficiency, I'm curious about the origins of this problem-solving superpower.
The concept of dynamic programming can be traced back to Richard Bellman's work in the 1950s.
Okay.
He recognized the power of breaking down complex problems and storing those intermediate solutions.
Another unsung hero of efficient computing. It's amazing how these foundational ideas from decades ago are still so relevant today.
That's the beauty of fundamental principles. But let's shift gears now
Okay.
and talk about another approach to problem solving, one that embraces a bit more spontaneity.
Ooh, I love spontaneity.
Yeah.
What's next on our algorithmic adventure?
We're going to explore greedy algorithms. Okay. They're all about making the best choice at each step, even if you don't have the full picture.
So like that friend who always goes for the first slice of cake, even though there might be a better one hiding in the back.
Huh. That's a perfect analogy.
A bit impulsive, but hey, sometimes those first slices are the best.
But in the world of algorithms, those impulsive choices can often lead to pretty good solutions, especially when speed matters more than absolute perfection.
So when you need a good solution fast, greedy algorithms are your go-to.
Yeah.
But can you give me some real-world examples?
Yeah.
Where do we see this grab the first slice approach in action?
Well, think about how your GPS navigates you through traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Dijkstra's algorithm, a classic example of a greedy algorithm, makes quick decisions at each intersection based on the current traffic conditions.
So it's constantly reassessing, always looking for the most efficient path forward, even if it means changing course along the way.
Exactly. And then there's Kriskal's algorithm, which optimizes network connections. It greedily adds edges to a graph until it finds the most efficient way to connect all the points in a network.
So those intricate network diagrams we see in movies, there's a greedy algorithm behind those, making sure data flows smoothly across all those interconnected points.
You got it. They're working behind the scenes, making sure those connections are as efficient as possible.
Okay. I'm starting to see the appeal of this greedy approach.
Right.
But are there ever situations where it backfires?
Right.
When that first slice of cake turns out to be a bit stale?
That's a great question. And it's important to remember that greedy algorithms don't always find the absolute best solution.
Right.
Sometimes those quick decisions can lead to a less optimal outcome in the long run.
So it's like grabbing that first parking spot you see, only to realize it's miles away from the store entrance. You save time initially, but end up with a longer walk.
Exactly. But even if a greedy algorithm doesn't always find the perfect solution, it often finds a pretty good one in a fraction of the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes good enough is all you need, especially when you're dealing with real-time situations where speed is key.
That makes sense. Sometimes you just need to grab a slice of cake and enjoy the moment, even if it's not the absolute best one.
Yeah.
But speaking of efficient paths, let's circle back to those fascinating graphs we were talking about earlier. Now that we have a better understanding of algorithms, we can explore how they're applied to graphs in even more detail.
Absolutely. We can dive deeper into how graph algorithms are used in a wide range of applications, from social media recommendations to logistics optimization and even fraud detection.
Sounds like we're about to uncover a whole new level of graph-powered magic.
We are, but we'll have to save that adventure for the next part of our deep dive.
All right, listeners, stay tuned for part two, where we'll explore how graph algorithms are shaping the world around us.
Welcome back to the deep dive. When we left off, we were about to explore the fascinating world of graph algorithms.
I'm ready to get graphical. I'm especially curious about how they're being used to solve real-world problems. We touched on GPS navigation and social media, but what other applications are out there?
Get ready to be amazed because they're practically everywhere. Let's start with logistics companies. Imagine delivering packages to thousands of locations you'd need to find the most efficient routes to save time, fuel, and money.
So those delivery trucks aren't just driving around randomly. There's a whole lot of graph-powered intelligence happening behind the scenes.
You got it. They're using complex graph algorithms to optimize those delivery routes, taking into account things like traffic patterns, distance, and even delivery time windows. It's a massive optimization problem, and graph algorithms are the key to solving it effectively.
It's like a giant puzzle where every package, every truck, every road has to fit together perfectly. And graph algorithms are the master puzzle solvers.
Precisely. And this optimization goes beyond simple delivery routes. Think about a company like Amazon, managing a global network of warehouses, delivery centers, and transportation hubs. It's mind-bogglingly complex.
So graph algorithms are essentially the brains behind the operation, ensuring that everything flows smoothly and efficiently from the warehouse to your doorstep.
Absolutely. But let's move beyond logistics and talk about something a bit more personal, those people you may know suggestions on social media.
Oh, yes. I've always wondered how those work. Is it just random? Or is there some secret formula behind those suggestions?
It's far from random. Graph algorithms are analyzing those intricate webs of connections to find potential friends based on shared interests, groups, or mutual connections. It's all about identifying those hidden links within a vast network.
So it's not just about who you know directly, but who those people know and who those people know and so on. It's like a chain reaction of connections.
Exactly. And the same principle applies to those you might also like product recommendations on e-commerce sites.
Right.
Graph algorithms are analyzing your past purchases and comparing them to other users with similar tastes.
That explains why I keep getting recommendations for books I never knew I wanted. It's like having a personal shopping assistant who knows my tastes better than I do. But sometimes it feels a little creepy, like they're reading my mind.
I know what you mean. It's a fascinating but somewhat unsettling side effect of this data-driven world we live in. But let's not forget about the good guys, those using graph algorithms to fight crime.
Oh, right. Tell me more about how graphs are being used in the world of fraud detection.
Well, banks and financial institutions use graph algorithms to analyze transactions and identify those subtle patterns that might indicate fraudulent activity.
So instead of just looking at individual transactions, they're looking at the bigger picture, the network of connections between accounts and transactions.
Exactly. They're creating graphs that map out the flow of money. And then they use algorithms to detect anomalies like large transfers to unfamiliar accounts or sudden spikes in spending that don't fit the usual pattern.
It's like having a financial detective who can see those hidden connections and flag suspicious activity before it becomes a major problem. That's incredible.
It is. And the applications of graph algorithms just keep growing as we generate more data and find new ways to connect the dots.
Okay, I'm thoroughly convinced. Graph algorithms are like the ultimate data detectives, uncovering hidden insights and solving all sorts of problems. But are there any downsides to using them? It can't all be sunshine and roses, right?
That's a good point. While incredibly powerful graphs can also present challenges, one of the biggest is complexity. As data sets grow and connections multiply, graphs can become incredibly intricate, making them difficult to visualize and analyze effectively.
So it's like trying to solve a connect-the-dots puzzle with millions of dots. That would be a nightmare.
Exactly. It's a constant challenge for researchers and engineers to develop tools and techniques for managing this complexity and extracting meaningful insights from these massive graphs.
It sounds like it takes a special kind of genius to work with these intricate webs of data.
It does. And it's a rapidly evolving field with new discoveries and applications emerging all the time.
So while graphs have their challenges, they're also an incredibly powerful tool for understanding the world around us. They're like a lens that allows us to see the connections and relationships that shape everything from social networks to financial systems.
Absolutely. Speaking of exploring possibilities,
okay,
let's shift gears and talk about an algorithm that's all about trial and error, but in a very systematic and effective way.
Ooh. I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
We're going to delve into the world of backtracking, where we'll uncover how it's used to solve a wide range of problems, from puzzle solving to resource allocation and even artificial intelligence.
Okay, I'm ready to backtrack my way to algorithmic enlightenment.
Well, get ready to put on your detective hat, because we're about to uncover how backtracking is quietly shaping the world around us in ways you might not expect.
Hit me with it. What kind of backtracking magic are we talking about?
Remember how we talked about backtracking as a way of systematically exploring different possibilities until you find a solution that meets specific constraints?
Vaguely. It's like trying different keys until you find the one that unlocks the door, right?
That's a perfect analogy. Mm. And just like with finding the right key backtracking algorithms, try different options, step by step, always checking for conflicts and backtracking when necessary until they find a solution that works.
Okay, but can you give me a concrete example? I need to see this in action to really understand it.
Sure. Let's imagine you're designing a program to solve Sudoku puzzles.
Ooh, I love Sudoku, but I'm terrible at it. Maybe this backtracking magic can help me up my game.
Huh. Well, backtracking is definitely a key strategy for solving Sudoku. You start by filling in a cell with a number. Then you check if that number breaks any of the Sudoku rules. If it does, you try a different number. If you've tried every possible number in that cell, you backtrack to the previous cell and try a different number there.
So it's like a carefully orchestrated dance of trial and error, always moving forward, but ready to step back and adjust when needed.
Exactly. It's a systematic exploration of the puzzle, trying different combinations, always making sure each step is valid.
It sounds like it would take forever to solve a Sudoku puzzle this way.
It can be a computationally intensive process, especially for larger puzzles, but it's often the most effective way to find a solution, especially when there are many constraints to consider.
So it's not necessarily the fastest approach, but it's thorough and reliable.
Exactly. And this makes backtracking a valuable tool for solving problems where accuracy is critical.
Okay, so we've got Sudoku. What other backtracking wonders are out there?
Well, think about artificial intelligence, particularly game-playing AI. Those systems that can beat human champions at chess or Go rely heavily on backtracking to explore different moves and strategies.
I can only imagine the number of possibilities those AI systems have to consider. It must be like searching for a needle in a haystack the size of a planet.
You're not wrong. It's a computationally massive task, but that's where the power of backtracking comes in. The algorithm systematically explores different moves, evaluates their potential outcomes, and backtracks when necessary to try alternative paths.
So it's like having a digital chess grandmaster, constantly analyzing the board, considering all the possible moves and making adjustments based on the opponent's actions. It's mind-boggling.
It is. And this same principle is applied in countless other scenarios, from optimizing resource allocation in complex systems like air traffic control or scheduling, to finding the most efficient routes for delivery trucks navigating busy city streets.
It's incredible how something as seemingly simple as trial and error, when done systematically, can lead to such sophisticated problem-solving capabilities.
Absolutely. It's a testament to the ingenuity of those who design and implement these algorithms.
Okay, but let's be real here. This backtracking approach, while fascinating, can't be perfect, right? Yeah. What are some of the limitations we should be aware of?
That's a great question. And it's essential to understand that while powerful, backtracking does have its downsides. One of the biggest is that it can be computationally expensive, especially when the search space is vast, as we've seen with the game-playing AI example.
So for problems where speed is critical, backtracking might not be the best approach.
Exactly. There's often a trade-off between the thoroughness of backtracking and the speed of other algorithms.
Makes sense. What other limitations should we keep in mind?
Well, another potential issue is that backtracking doesn't always guarantee finding the absolute best solution. It might find a solution that meets the criteria, but it might not be the most optimal one.
So it's like settling for a parking spot that's a few blocks away from your destination, when there might have been a closer one if you had kept searching. You found a solution, but it might not have been the most efficient one.
That's a great way to think about it. And this highlights the importance of choosing the right algorithm for the problem at hand. Sometimes you need the absolute best solution, even if it takes longer. Other times, a good enough solution found quickly is perfectly acceptable.
So it's all about understanding the strengths and weaknesses of different approaches and choosing the one that best fits the specific problem you're trying to solve.
Precisely. There's no one-size-fits-all solution in the world of algorithms.
Okay, so backtracking is like a digital detective, a game-playing AI, a resource optimizer, and a puzzle solver, all rolled into one, but with a bit of a good enough attitude sometimes.
I love that summary. It captures the essence of backtracking perfectly. But let's not forget about another algorithmic powerhouse we discussed earlier, dynamic programming.
Oh, yes. The land of cheat sheets and efficient problem solving. I'm ready to get dynamic again. What new insights about dynamic programming await us?
Well, we're going to delve even deeper into the ways this technique is shaping the digital world behind the scenes, from financial modeling to DNA sequencing and even understanding the nuances of human language.
Okay, I'm hooked. Let's get dynamic. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're wrapping up our exploration of data structures and algorithms, and we're diving back into the world of dynamic programming.
Yeah, that's right. Last time we talked about how dynamic programming breaks down complex problems into smaller, more manageable chunks.
Right.
And stores those solutions to avoid redundant calculations.
It was like having a cheat sheet for solving those tricky problems. But instead of math equations, we were talking about optimizing warehouse robots.
Exactly. And those robots are just one example.
Okay.
This time, let's shift gears and talk about the world finance. Imagine you're a financial analyst trying to develop a trading algorithm. You want to maximize profits by making smart buy and sell decisions.
Right.
But predicting the stock market is incredibly complex.
Sounds like a high stakes game.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to be the one making those decisions.
It definitely takes nerves of steel.
Yeah.
But dynamic programming can help. Instead of trying to predict the entire future of a stock, which is impossible,
right,
it breaks the problem down into smaller, more manageable decisions at specific points in time.
So instead of looking at the big, overwhelming picture, you're focusing on making the best decision at each step along the way.
Precisely. Dynamic programming analyzes historical data, identifies patterns, and calculates the potential outcomes of different trading choices.
Okay.
It's like having a super-powered financial advisor constantly crunching numbers and recommending adjustments to your portfolio based on real-time market data.
So it's not about finding a single perfect solution.
Right.
but rather a series of optimal decisions based on the information available at each moment.
Exactly. It's about navigating the complexities of the market.
Okay.
And making strategic choices that lead to profitable outcomes over time.
Okay, so we've got financial trading. What other real-world applications of dynamic programming are out there?
Let's dive into the world of biology and DNA sequencing. Scientists compare DNA strands to find similarities and differences, and this involves aligning those strands in the most optimal way.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamic programming plays a key role in this complex process.
So dynamic programming is helping us unlock the secrets of the human genome.
It is.
It's incredible.
Dynamic programming algorithms help find the best alignment between those DNA strands, revealing those crucial similarities and differences that help us understand everything from genetic diseases to evolutionary relationships.
It's amazing how something as seemingly abstract as dynamic programming can have such profound impacts on our understanding of life itself.
Absolutely. And it doesn't stop there. Think about those chatbots and voice assistants that are becoming increasingly common these days. They rely heavily on natural language processing, or NLP, a field of AI that's all about enabling computers to understand human language.
I have to admit, sometimes I forget I'm talking to a computer when I'm interacting with those chatbots.
Yeah.
They've gotten so good.
They have. And one of the key challenges in NLP is figuring out how to break down those sentences and phrases into their grammatical components, a process called parsing. And guess what?
What?
Dynamic programming is a core technique used in many parsing algorithms.
So dynamic programming is helping computers understand the nuances of human language.
It is.
That's mind-blowing.
This understanding of language structure is crucial for everything from machine translation to voice recognition and even sentiment analysis,
right,
where computers can gauge the emotional tone of text.
I'm starting to see dynamic programming everywhere now. It's like the secret sauce behind so many of the technologies we use every day.
It is. It's a powerful and versatile technique that's quietly shaping the digital landscape around us.
Well, as much as I'd love to keep exploring the wonders of dynamic programming, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive into the world of data structures and algorithms.
It's been an incredible journey, hasn't it? We've explored the foundational concepts that underpin the digital world, from binary trees to graphs, from sorting algorithms to dynamic programming, and everything in between.
I feel like I've gained a whole new appreciation for the complexity and ingenuity of the systems that power our everyday lives. I'll never look at a search engine or a social media feed the same way again.
Exactly. And remember, this is just the beginning. There's a vast universe of knowledge and possibilities within the realm of data structures and algorithms just waiting to be explored.
So, dear listeners, as you go about your digital day interacting with your favorite apps, searching the web, or marveling at the latest technological advancements, take a moment to appreciate the unsung heroes, the data structures and algorithms that are working tirelessly behind the scenes to make it all happen.
And if you find yourself intrigued, don't hesitate to dive deeper. Who knows, maybe you'll be the one designing the next game-changing algorithm that shapes the future of technology.
Until next time, happy coding!